Hey everybody, it's Sean Mills and this is the Hack My Homestead podcast. Today is Tuesday, February 21st, 2023, and our topic for today is going to be inverters. Yeah, that's right. We're going to talk about inverters. We're going to talk about the different types of inverters, and we're going to talk a bit about all-in-one inverters that are not net metering. Right, but they can be attached to a grid tie system. So let's start by talking about the different types of inverters out there. So what an inverter does is it takes a DC input, typically from a battery, and it inverts that to AC, alternating current, and that's what uses or that's what your house uses. So, for example, in the event that you have a 12-volt battery bank, and you're trying to get 120 volts for your refrigerator, for example, you would have an inverter capable of taking a 12-volt DC input and outputting 120 volts AC, probably in a pure sine wave. And what that does is it allows you to step up the voltage and alternate current instead of direct current for your appliances, because that's what they're looking for. Now, inverters come in a wide variety of shapes and sizes. You can get 12-volt input inverters, 24, 48. I think there's some 36 out there. I've even heard of 72s, even though I've never seen one before. And then for an output, you can get 120 or 240-volt output. So lots of different combinations there. You want to make sure that you are matching your battery bank up to your inverter. So, for example, if you have a 24-volt lithium iron phosphate battery, you're going to want a 24-volt inverter. If you try to put that on a 48-volt inverter, you're going to get an error message that says low voltage, and it will turn off to protect your batteries because it thinks that your 48-volt batteries are only reading 24 volts. Okay? So that's very important. Now, the different types of inverters. You've got just your standard inverter. All it does is invert from DC to AC. So if you've ever seen one of those deals that you plug into your cigarette lighter or your cigar lighter, I guess it's called, in your car, and then you plug a regular household plug into that, that's actually an inverter, okay? A very small one. I've got a little 30-watt one in one of my trucks, and it does what it's supposed to do, but, you know, that's a small version. And that your smaller ones are typically just the inverter. They don't have all the different functions. All they do is output 120 volts from a lower voltage input. Now, the next level you have is an inverter charger. An inverter charger does the same thing that an inverter does, but it can also take an AC input and use that to charge your DC batteries. So, for example, an off-grid system may have an inverter charger that is connected to a generator and is connected to the batteries and is connected to the house. And so when the generator is on, there's a transfer switch inside the inverter that takes the available AC input and shunts it off to the house, and it takes whatever remaining capacity that you have for that circuit. So a lot of times there'll be like a 30 amp output on your inverter. Or rather on your generator, it'll take a portion of that and send it into the house, and the balance will actually use to charge up your batteries. So in the event that you have an inverter charger and you're doing things off-grid that require the generator to be on, so when we first went off-grid, we had a 3-horsepower deep well pump, and the generator that we had could not handle the startup draw, the startup current for that, and so we would actually... or rather the inverter kit. So we would actually kick on the generator, and while the generator was there for the well pump, it could also be utilized to charge up the batteries. As a matter of fact, when we first went off grid, we didn't even have solar panels. It was straight up generator, inverter charger, batteries, and into the house. Okay. Then your next option. So typically with an inverter charger, once you add solar, you're adding a separate device called a charge controller. So you've got your solar panels, they run into your charge controller, which charges up your batteries. Your battery goes into your inverter, which outputs the 120 or 240, and then it may also have an input of 120 or 240 that it can utilize to charge the batteries or to run the lights in the house. Okay. So then the next thing is a system that's an all-in-one, which means that it's got the inverter, it's got the charger, and it also has an MPPT charge controller built in. So what a charge controller does is it takes the voltage and amperage that's coming in from the solar panels and optimizes it to get the most amount of energy from the solar panels into the batteries as stored energy, okay? And you've got two different types of charge controllers. You've got a PWM or pulse width modulation and MPPT, which is maximum power point tracking. And these two different types of inverters work a little bit differently. But the thing to the main thing to remember there is that an MPPT charger is going to be a little bit more efficient in converting that DC from the panels to whatever DC the battery wants. And the reason why that's important is because a battery usually takes a set voltage and a really, really high amount of amperage or a lot of current to charge up the, call it the bottom 80%. So if you think about a battery as a glass of water, to get the bottom 80% into that water or into that glass, you charge it with a lot of pressure, a lot of water pressure. And then as it's getting closer to the top, you start backing off on the pressure and start increasing the amount of voltage. And so in this scenario that I'm describing, to go from 90 or from 80% full of water to 95% full of water, you'll have a different amount of voltage with lower amperage. And then to get that last 5% or so, you're going to get a very high voltage in relation to the battery itself, but not a ton of amperage. Otherwise, you would damage the battery. So that's how that charge controller works. Well, an all-in-one machine has that functionality built into it, along with the inverter functionality, along with the AC charger functionality, and sometimes they'll have one or two transfer switches. So sometimes you could actually have an AC input from the grid and an AC input from your battery and your DC inputs, and some of them you can put multiple DC inputs, and you can also put your I'm driving here, as you may hear, may have heard, and for the first time on the podcast, actually had to pause due to something happening around me for traffic. So had a guy moving about twice the rate of speed as everyone else. I wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to try to occupy the same space in my lane that I was already in. So I think I was talking about all-in-ones where you can have an AC, multiple AC ends. You can have your battery bank DC in. You can have multiple PV ends. And it just does all the work of keeping all of that stuff working as optimally as possible. Now, here is the issue with an all-in-one system like that. It's really, really nice in that all of that intra-component wiring is already done for you. You connect the things to the outside and you're done. So all of that's really nice. But in order to do that work, it actually uses a lot of energy just being on. And I mean a lot of energy just being on. So a lot, obviously, is a relative term. But, you know, some of these systems, you might need an extra 400 watts of solar panels just to account for the self-draw that the inverter is going to have when it's on. And so in a lot of systems, that's not a problem. And as a matter of fact, I would say if you have the space for it, that is a more cost-effective solution than having multiple components and one less solar panel, for example. So I would definitely recommend in a lot of situations to utilize these all-in-ones. And almost every single instance now, when I'm designing a system for someone that is going to be tied to the grid. And so essentially you have your battery bank and then the grid is your extra battery is a good way to think about it. And almost every one of those instances, I'm using an all-in-one system like this because essentially what this is for more than anything else is backup power. And it doesn't matter if the grid is down when you're using it in this configuration. Now, if you have a system that is backfeeding the grid, a net metering system, where when you're using less energy than you're producing, that power is actually put on the grid, and the grid is actually a battery for you at that point. There is an entire different set of rules that apply, and most of the time when someone comes to me and asks me to design a grid-tied net metering system, I don't end up taking that job on. And it's not because I can't do it. It's because I tell them up front, I cannot take the time to learn what your local codes are, what your local power company's codes are, and make sure that I've got all of those boxes checked for each individual system that I design. It's just too much time. There's something like 3,200 plus local power companies in the United States, and all of them have a slightly different version of an interconnection agreement, meaning that if you're going to put energy on their grid, they have to approve it, and they've got a set of steps that they go through. And on just about every one of them, the steps may be similar, but they're different. So I just tell everyone, I can design a system that works 100%. It works, and it will be safe. But I cannot and will not design a system that's going to meet all your local codes. You will have to find a local expert to do that. Now, some places are pretty easy, and finding that local expert is literally as easy as taking the documentation that I would send you as part of my design scope and putting it in front of that person, and they say, yep, this will all work. This meets all of the local codes. I will put my logo on it and submit it on your behalf to the local power, or rather to the whoever the powers that be, and you know, whether that be the local power company, whether there's some sort of intermediary utility, or whether that's the power generator. Again, that depends on where you live. But in that scenario, I actually have had systems, and I personally installed a system in Tennessee at one point where I did the design, did the one line, got all of the UL listing documentation together into what's called a utility package. Had my guy with the right qualifications that the state required rubber stamp it. So he just put his logo on my design. We submitted it to the state, got everything approved. And then essentially he just pulled the permits and he was there when there were inspections and he did a little bit of the AC side work for me. But yeah, for most people I say, look, I can absolutely do this design for you. I will give you a design that works, but I can't guarantee that it will be approved as is in your local municipality. So in the event that there is extra requirements or extra rules to get that approval done, that would be something that you would just have to work through your local power company. So in that scenario, like I say, you have, you know, maybe I do a design for you and the local power company decides that there's an additional DC disconnect that they require somewhere so that their electricians can do that. And they want that standardized across all the houses in their area. You know, that would be a reasonable regulation for that municipality or that local power company to have. It would be, hey, we want, if the firefighters show up in our county, and there's a solar array on a house, we want to be able to go to the same spot on every house and know that that's where the disconnect is. And I totally get that. But I can't and will not try to learn what all of those different regulations are. A lot of people don't realize this. There are currently 4 different national electrical codes in effect, depending on what part of the United States you're in. Yes, that's right. There are 4 different NEC codes. And in one state, you might go from one part of the state to another, and there's a different code that is in effect. And typically, when they rewrite those codes, they aren't taking things out. They are typically adding things, because if they weren't adding things, well, why would you pay them to write a new code, right? So on those types of systems, It is a different type of inverter. There's an additional layer of safety that is required to automatically shut the inverter off when the grid is off, so that it's not backfeeding power onto the local portion of that grid when you might have linemen out there working on it. And so that makes perfect sense. But it used to be that was pretty much the options that you had. You could do either an off-grid system or you could do a grid-tied system. Well, your new systems that are like grid interactive, where you can literally program some of these inverters and say, I would like to not use any AC power from the grid until my battery bank is down to 40% depth of discharge. And at that point, you can use AC power until it gets to 90%. And then I want to go back to using battery power, right? Like that would be something that you could look at doing. And then you could monitor, okay, well, how is that cycling my battery when I'm doing that? Or should I adjust those percentages? Or should I take it down to 25% and allow it to go up to only 80 before it kicks off? Like all of those things are specific to your house or your specific thing that you're putting on. But what the point I wanted to make is you can absolutely have a solar array with a battery bank with grid backup that is not going to cut off when the grid cuts off. All that's going to happen when the grid cuts off is that you're not going to be charging the batteries on the AC side unless you plug it into a generator. And like I said, there are inverters out there on the market that have two AC inputs, and you can do both of those things and decide what you want to do. You can do both of those things, and some of these also have an automatic generator start. So you could go so far as to say, I want the grid to come on and start charging the batteries when the system is at 40% depth of discharge. But if it gets down to 20% depth of discharge, meaning the grid is down, then I would like to automatically start that generator up and charge the batteries back up. So that's inverter. That's what an all-in-one inverter is. Like I said, the biggest thing to remember with an all-in-one is you have to be aware of the self-draw. You have to be aware of the fact that you're going to need about 400 to 500 extra watts, depending on where you are, just to take care of the daily appliance use, so to speak, of the inverter itself. Now, price points, the Solark 12K, right, which is a massive all-in-one inverter that is a really nice inverter, is about $8,000. Signature Solar has their EG4, and you've got a few other 6,000 watt generators, or rather 6,000 watt inverters that are around 48 volt DC that are in the $1,000 to $1,500 range, just depending on what options you have. It's definitely easier to go with 120 volt versus going with a 240 volt inverter. They're cheaper. You don't have to worry about the phases, and it's just an easier system to install. I'm actually putting a 240 volt inverter in my daughter's bus right now, and all I can think of is this is a massive waste. I don't actually need this, but this is what I'm using. So by the time we actually flip the switch and get her system going, I may have pulled that inverter out and replaced it with a 120 volt inverter. So I think that's all I've got to cover on inverters today. If you guys have questions, make sure you send them to me at Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at hackmysolar.com. And for the few of you guys that emailed me over the weekend asking questions, keep those coming. I really appreciate it. Knowing that you guys are actually listening and that you've got questions and that, you know, what I'm saying is resonating with you and, you're asking for some clarifying questions is really a good feeling. And I definitely appreciate it, and I appreciate the words of encouragement. So get those questions into me. I will answer them on the air. I do have a little small generation system that I am looking at putting together for a listener, and I think I will walk through all the components and how to assemble that system on a podcast that's going to be in the near future. Well, with that being said, I'll talk to you guys next time.